Ghosty fam, Amy here. Welcome to The Activity Continues, a podcast where three soul friends talk about all things paranormal. Ghosts, hauntings, psychics, movies and TV shows, especially The Dead Files, and other spooky and spooky adjacent things. We also like to interview people in the paranormal community, as well as past Dead Files clients and other interesting people. Sometimes we even tell your stories. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Thanks for joining us again. This week, we're doing something a little different. Since I had my live show with my other podcast a couple of days ago, I didn't really have the bandwidth to do all the prep that needs to be done for a recap episode. So AP had a great idea, and we switched gears. So no recap today, and AP will tell you a little bit more in the episode, but we are doing something different. Oh, also, May has five Thursdays in it, so this would have been an extra episode anyway. And so it was a perfect way to do a bonus episode. We don't have any real content warning.
No, content warning. Mm-hmm. Just a lot of stuff in history, which includes, you know, the typical light talk of murder, potential suicide.
Yeah, just, you know, gunning down three guys in a cave.
Nefarious deals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, who hasn't done that, though? Let's be real.
Yeah. Just because it's not a day for us.
It's not a successful week if I haven't done that. Right. Just kidding.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, you guys.
That went off the rails.
Yeah, enjoy the episode. All right. Welcome back, everyone. Tonight, as mentioned, we are doing something a little different than normal. We're going to share about some haunted locations in Minnesota. We have some stories to share that are unique and fun places that you can visit if you haven't. Or maybe you might want to come to Minnesota just to check out a few of these.
And have a drink with us.
Yeah.
Have a drink with us.
There's a lot of cool places, and we're going to be sticking kind of around the Twin Cities area. I'm going to start off covering the Wabasha Street Caves, which is in St. Paul. And then I'll hand it over to Megan, who's going to cover First Ave, mm-hmm. which both of these are going to be a little bit fun for us to do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right.
Very exciting.
Very exciting.
Hold on to your pants, everybody.
Definitely found some things out that I did not know before.
Mm-hmm. Good. Hit us.
Right.
Pew, pew, pew.
So, starting off, and I will be citing some sources. I will be reading a few things directly from the source, just because it was so well written, and I would just butcher it. So, I'm going to butcher it by reading it to you.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Obviously. So sit back, relax, and let's transport back to 1920s. Maybe get a little feel of a speakeasy going on. Mm-hmm. All right. So the Wabasha Street Caves. Now, where I used to get my car oil change and like my mechanic was literally across the street from this. I've never gone in. I have never gone into the Wabasha Street Caves, and we need to go.
Yeah.
Doesn't it look like a weird, like, hole, like, just to the side of a...
Yeah.
It's like
here's why.
Yeah, I lived by it. Lived by it.
Really? Mm-hmm.
So the caves are in St. Paul, south of the Mississippi River, as it comes through there. They were created in the 1800s out of sandstone cliffs. They are not naturally forming. And they were created when they were mining for silica.
Sure.
Glass making. Now, if you remember in Sweet Home Alabama, in the movie,
the lightning
strikes the sand and they go and dig out the glass from the lightning strike because sand is full of silica. Mm-hmm. So these caves were created in the 1860s about time frame. And that's where it started off with all of these. There's somewhere around 50 caves that they carved out of the sandstone on that cliff. When the mining died out, a new venture came in. What also grows well in dark, damp caves?
Mold.
Mushrooms. Mold is along the lines of fungi.
We were right.
You're in the lines, but yes, mushrooms.
Oh,
so in the 1880s or somewhere around there, a Frenchman named Albert, and I'm going to totally butcher this.
Always the French.
But Mauchnot? It's Mauchnotte. He started growing all of these mushrooms, and enough that they were able to supply all the local restaurants. And so they started calling the caves Mushroom Valley. So literally, cave to table. I mean, so not only did they grow mushrooms here, but a lot of the restaurants aged their beer and cheese in these caves because
okay,
they're
cool. That is kind of cool. That's really neat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it's cool and damp. And so it kind of, and you can adjust where, you know, where you would put something to adjust mm-hmm. the temperature for aging. So if you've ever bought cave aged cheese, which mm-hmm. you can still, mm-hmm. it is truly aged in a cave.
Cool. I have seen that. I never mm-hmm. even like pictured it. Never. I heard the words, but I didn't connect it
didn't
to anything
register.
In particular.
Yeah. Mm-mm. It's, you know, it's a really unique thing. I remember, so 6 years ago, I went to Amsterdam with my cousins and my sister, and we did a cheese course, and they were talking about the Gouda, which is only cow's milk. The country never trademarked Gouda, and they're like, we should have, because you have all these people creating different kinds of Gouda that are not traditional Holland Goudas. Mm-hmm. And it's actually the shape. It has a lot to do with the shape of the cheese mm-hmm. specifically, but it has to be a cow's milk. And they don't have heat or air conditioning in the building that they age their cheese in. They use doors and windows. And so if it's hot out, they open everything up. If it's mm-hmm. cold out, they close things down. Hmm. And so that's how they regulate the temperatures. And then they use a little hammer, a little wooden hammer to tap on the cheese, the wheels of cheese, to decide if it's at a doneness that they want. Mm-hmm. So
interesting.
Oh, I love cheese.
I love
Gouda's one of my favorite. Gouda's my favorite.
I don't know. I'm going to be honest. I don't know if I've had Gouda.
Oh, I think you have if you've been to my house and I've had cheese on the counter.
It's, I do eat
and you can get different kinds. Like you can get a very low aged, but a good aged Gouda that's crumbly when you slice into it. Oh,
I always feel very ritzy at Amy's parties.
It's true.
Because she's like, here's my cheese board and my cheese knives and these special crackers. And it's very fancy at Amy's.
Yes,
it sure is.
Very,
and
very
fancy cocktails.
Oh, the best. Mm-hmm. With bartender Greg.
It's our own little speakeasy.
Yeah.
It's so true.
Speaking of, guess what happens come the 1920s?
I'm going to guess. Mm. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that it becomes a speakeasy.
It does, because Prohibition came into play. So mm-hmm. all the restaurants and bars started shutting down because people weren't going to them because they couldn't drink.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's
so
crazy. What happened?
Now it becomes a speakeasy that is a popular hangout for not only the local socialites and, you know, all the women in their flapper dresses, but also for local gangsters of lore like John Dillinger, who was famously arrested in Stillwater.
Yep.
Or Kid Can.
As well as Babyface Nelson.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yes.
Him. And Fred and Doc Barker of the infamous mm-hmm. Ma Barker gang.
Mm-hmm. I don't know
about Kid Can. I don't know. He probably was there.
Let's assume. It's Kid Can. He was in everything.
He was the godfather of Minneapolis. So, yeah he was there.
He was there.
Yep. So, and this was, you know, again, in St. Paul, but this is, so it wouldn't have been necessarily his territory. I don't know if you can hear Wesley growling behind me. My dad just got home, so you might hear him bark.
I heard him before, but not now.
Yeah. But there's some stories, and I'll get into one of the stories that they share, somebody shares about what may have occurred in this area that had to do with the gangsters of the time. Mm-hmm. It is said that a lot of gangster activity, as in their deals, happened in this area. Mm-hmm. So it was a speakeasy. Then after Prohibition ended, it continued to be a common hangout and for gambling, drinking, music, dancing, all the things that they did in the 20s that they can now legally do again.
All the fun
kind of legally do again. Some of it's not legal.
One thing that's not legal.
Gambling probably would not have been legal.
Oh, mm-mm. Then. Yeah. Sorry. Then.
Gambling. But even nowadays, gambling is only legal in certain parts and doing certain things. So like poker and stuff, you can't do that just at a normal bar.
Mm-hmm.
You have to
that
be
makes
at.
Sense. I mean, who'd want to be like, let's go to the bar and play. Well, it has to hold them.
It has to do with the Native American where the casinos and things are. And
because they get the money from our gambling.
Yep. Yeah.
That makes sense. We mm-hmm. took so
as
much
they
from
should.
Them. Yeah.
My opinion.
We took so much.
Yeah, that's right.
And gave
so there's
such.
Only certain things, certain types of gambling that are allowed. So some of this was still in the illegal phase, but it was known as the Castle Royal Nightclub.
Okay, I love that.
And I think what I read was that the potentially the daughter of the guy who started the mushroom farms was the one that was running this. So
it all comes back to the mushrooms.
It all comes back to it.
I've said it before, yep. And I'll say it again.
So this Castle Royal nightclub would bring in musicians of the time, which I actually have heard of these names, but I don't know anything about them. Cab Calloway and the Dorsey Brothers are two different types of musicians that came through here and were often present. So you can kind of picture like the swanky, you know, dancing, swing dancing and that sort of stuff, which they do swing dancing on Thursdays at the Wabasha Street Caves. The new owners nowadays do swing dancing. Yep. So you can sign up for swing dancing.
I know. Yeah. That's fun to know.
I'd like to go watch other people swing dance. And I would just crash into people. Yeah.
I would not be good. Yeah. They would be like, get her out. But
you got to know what you're doing.
It's that trying to keep things. It's an event center
That's
today.
That's really fun. Yeah. That's really fun.
So, but during the times in the 1940s, FBI took notice and saw the nefarious activities and drove the fun-loving crowds away.
Of course they did.
So then...
The
G-Man
ruining everything.
Yeah, pretty much. Over time, the Wabasha Street Caves have handed over, you know, changed hands a few times. But they are now today an event center and rental facility. So you can have weddings there. I was like, huh, I'm looking to do kind of a little soiree for my 40th. So I'm like, maybe I should look there and see what the cost would be.
That'd be fun.
And they have all sorts of tours and other activities. You can check their website out. They're under new ownership as of like 4 years ago. Her name is Faith Pawn. And they want to preserve.
That's a name.
Yeah. They want to preserve the history of the area. So there's different tours. Of course, getting into October, they have ones that are specific to spirits of the area. They have, you know, both paranormal and true crime. So as I've said before on here, and I said with somebody else today, like we have so many cool, unique things around here that those are the things I look to do when I travel, but yeah. I haven't done them here necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. We never do the stuff that we should be doing in our own towns. I know.
Yeah.
Cause it's just like, well, that's just where we live and it's like not exotic cause it's not somewhere new.
Right.
But, I mean,
right. So I want to go into some of the alleged hauntings. Because, of course, there's no proof, so we will call them alleged.
Okay. Sure.
And it's, you know, who knows how many spirits call the caves home, but with the
Probably
history
five,
of the time, they could be from wildly different times. They could be from, you know, when it was the mines for silica, mushroom farming. Is it stuff from the Prohibition? Is it stuff before time? Mm-hmm. A former co-owner claims that everyone who has worked there has had experiences and that there just is more activity in October. And I just kind of said, is it because there's more people coming in during that time? So there's more people being like, oh, I got touched. I felt something. Is there just that?
More stuff reported.
More stuff reported.
Or is
more
he
people
just
around.
Saying that to get more people in?
She. Yeah.
She, sorry, she, that was very sexist of me.
Sure was.
Or were they just saying that to be like, it's right. more, you get more activity, come on down.
Exactly. Yeah. So a lot of things that they have are very common to what we have seen on the Dead Files and everything else. Encounters include whistling and footsteps, flickering lights, seeing spirits walk through the wall, other ghostly figures, stones being tossed, like to get your attention away from them, and other things like that. There is potential that there's an unsolved murder here from the gangster years,
as
mentioned earlier. And there is supposedly a man in a hat and suit of the era. So is he potentially
fancy?
This one that was murdered? There's also supposedly a woman who cries and other things like that. So I'm going to pull up part of an excerpt from a book that is Passport to the Paranormal by Rich Newman. And he resides in Tennessee, but he's a paranormal investigator as well as a blogger. So he had this kind of cool, I got a lot of information from him. So this website was the Llewellyn, Ghosts and Hauntings, the Wabasha Street Cave. So it's from his book, which will be in our show notes. So now going back to John Dillinger, I've mentioned before, potential that we have a pistol that may have belonged to him.
What?
Mm-hmm. So it's...
Whoa.
Somebody my dad knew, whose dad was a police officer during the time that Dillinger was arrested. And at that time, evidence just got thrown into boxes. And when it wasn't used anymore, you either burn it or take it somewhere. And so he had it. And somehow we ended up with this. We cannot prove it. We can just say it's a make and model that was very similar and well known to what Dillinger was reported to have. Just a little pistol.
It's his. I'm sure of it.
Yeah. So some of the spirits that Rich Newman describes, like I said, the ghost of an old gangster wearing a typical suit and hat has been seen on a few occasions, often accompanied by music, reports of a phantom couple on the dance floor. But the most well-known spirit is that of a must be a woman in white, because she is a forlorn woman who is seen sitting at the bar.
And they're she always be, in white. It,
exactly. She is sometimes startling to guests. So the other website that I used that I want to read from is thehauntedhouses.com. And this was just kind of a cool thing, the way that they broke this out. I love their style of writing. And so it's just on the St. Paul, Minnesota, Wabasha Street Caves. It says the gangsters who mingled here in these public speakeasy clubs were basically well-behaved, but mob business was carried out, resulting in mostly pleasant paranormal activity from the murdered mobsters. The Castle Royal was a romantic place to have a great time of fun and relaxations. The spirits still do.
Nice.
So, kind of went through the history, and yes, it was the daughter of the French mushroom farmer and her husband who established the Castle Royal nightclub, where people could come and spend a dollar for dinner, which was equivalent to a week's groceries.
Wow.
$1 for their dinner, equivalent to the week's groceries. They could enjoy and dance. There was touring bands, musical acts performing on stage, play cards, or just enjoy the fireplace.
Nice.
The Castle Royal had all the bells and whistles associated with high-class clubs, including a 1,600-square-foot dance floor, an elegant dining area near the dance floor and stage, a bar, a card playing room, fireside room, kitchen, and food and liquor. Nice. Castle Royal was a great success throughout the 1930s, but closed during World War II, and once again was used to grow mushrooms.
And it apparently all comes back to mushrooms.
Apparently, it did go into be a disco in the 1970s. And then it flooded. So I'm going with that Mother Nature just didn't care for disco.
Right. No, who does? I seem to remember
ABBA
when there was a nightclub
good band.
There. Yeah. Oh, yeah. ABBA's good.
Oh, I love ABBA. So history of manifestations is another section that they have in this. And this is where there is the story of at least one occasion where mob business was conducted. Happened in the fireside room, which is located on as a side room just off the main cave with the stage. The story goes that four gangsters were playing cards on a table in front of the fireside room's handsome stone fireplace, enjoying both the big band music and warmth from the fire. One well-dressed but shady-looking fella, a Big Louie type, it says in parentheses,
who is carrying...
I'm just going with like a big brute of a guy.
Like a... Yeah.
Yeah. Like an enforcer. He was carrying a case, talked to the band leader and asked him, say, could you quit early tonight? We have some unfinished business to take care of. And yes, that is the way it is written on this page.
That's the way they talked.
Not wanting to disappoint, the band did leave in a timely manner. After the crowds had left, there was just a closing waitress, these four card players, and the man with a case. She volunteered to stay behind. This seems like a bad idea. And close up after the card game. So everyone else went home. While in the kitchen, the waitress heard the popping sounds of a Tommy gun. She ran into the fireplace room to find three gangsters on the floor, shot to death by the man with the case. This hitman had fled with his partner, who had been playing cards with the now dead men. She immediately called the police, who asked her to stay outside. When the police came back outside after some time, they asked her why she had filed a false police report, threatening to bust her if she didn't recant her story. Can you say somebody's pockets are lined?
Uh-huh. Oh, my God.
That's how it was.
Mm-hmm. The police also claim that...
I'm sorry. If you hear guns, I'm not running towards the guns. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be like, hey, there's guns. What way are they? They're that way. I'm going to go that way.
Mm-hmm. The police claim that they hadn't found anything amiss. Not to be intimidated, she marched into the fireplace room and showed them the bullet holes in the stones in the fireplace. While there weren't any bodies or blood, the bullet holes told the story. It is theorized that the three dead gangsters were dragged into one of the other caves and buried there, either by the two men who did the dastardly deed or by the police themselves.
Could have been either one or all of them working together.
Yeah.
Yep.
But why no blood? Or are they just reporting no blood?
They were reporting no blood. She saw the bullet holes, but maybe they wrapped them in carpets and dragged them out. I don't know. Or they hurriedly clean things up a little bit differently. Or it's also gray, dark floors, rock floors potentially that just absorb some of it.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea.
The floors are probably dirt. Mm-hmm. But you would think there'd be blood on the walls too, but. Yeah, maybe they just were able
but
to clean it up.
But it's also sandstone, and sandstone is very porous, so can also pull in. So
and they made her wait outside, so.
They did, and there's no indication of how long it was from when she saw the bodies to when she ran to go call the police. And remember, this is 1930s. This is not,
today,
I have a cell phone.
She just whipped out her cell phone.
Yeah, this is dialing and getting connected through an operator.
And if the police were involved... They knew it was happening, and they did not hurry their asses over there. They were giving them guys plenty of time to clean up.
Yep.
Yeah.
So again, this information's all from hauntedhouses.com. And such a cool website. So highly recommend, like, if you've got some cool areas in your neighborhood, check it out and see if there's anything there.
Wonder if my old house is in there.
Yeah.
Probably.
So I have a couple more things that were written here, and then I'll hand it over to Megan to hop over to Minneapolis. But they have three different ones here. So you tell me which one you would like me to read first. Spirits with a soft spot.
Ooh, okay.
Love events, but dump the disco.
No.
Relaxed and happy.
Spirits with a soft spot is my vote.
First one's good.
Okay. These entities of the murdered gangsters have a soft spot for kids. While the owners in 2005 were cleaning in the caves, sprucing up the place, their young son was playing with a ball against the wall. The ball bounced into the men's bathroom. The boy stopped to pick up the ball and noticed a man dressed in a gangster attire straightening his tie. This entity turned and smiled and winked at the boy before disappearing.
Cute!
After a wedding celebration, a little boy told the wedding party that he had fun playing with those men. No one thought much about it until the bride and groom got their pictures back. One picture showed this little boy sitting at the table, happily smiling, surrounded by several apparitions, portrayed by mostly misty forms.
What?
Our tour guide showed us the photograph of the boy and his ghostly friends.
I want to see that.
They don't have that on here. Of course not. So then we'll go on to love events, but dump the disco. Three entities of the gunned down gangsters, allegedly, still hang out, going about their business and enjoying the music and events which take place in the caves. One of them doesn't care for the disco. During the 1970s disco era, the manager and an employee saw a full, fleshed out apparition of a man dressed in gangster attire walking down the hallway towards them. This scary looking character with cold eyes and a hostile demeanor walked past them and disappeared into a wall, inspiring a hasty retreat by the living.
Okay, I guess that's
one way to tell.
I don't like that they describe him as fleshed out. I don't like that.
I guess more solid, like you can see who he looked like. And lastly, the last story I have for the Wabasha Street Caves is entities feel relaxed and happy in the caves and are not afraid to appear in front of the living. An entity of a man wearing a Panama hat goes about his business and is seen inside the caves. An entity of a man meets an entity of a woman in the bar area around 3 a.m. for a nightcap or a forbidden meeting. While rehearsing for a play to be presented on the main stage, the actors involved saw an entity of a man sitting in the audience watching them. And an entity of a woman is seen wandering around the caves, perhaps looking for someone or something. So lots of different things that are going on. We've talked about before how stone can play in, and this is sedimentary stone. So sandstone is a sedimentary, similar to the way that limestone is a sedimentary stone. So it can potentially record a little bit more, or maybe it gives abilities mm-hmm. to have energy there. Again, hauntedhouses.com with most of the way that they wrote these. I just loved them and I didn't want to butcher their yeah. stories or the way that yeah. they put them out so beautifully. But this is a very cool place that is, I pass it literally every day on my way mm-hmm. to and from work because it's only a couple miles off of the 52 bridge.
Yep.
Because I crossed that 52 yep. bridge going over there. So definitely somewhere I want to check out. Glad I looked at this one because I had no idea. I just always knew the caves were there and you could go and like tour them. I just, yeah, I had no
that's
idea.
That's all I knew too. Well, I remember that when there was a disco there, or a nightclub anyways, probably in mm-hmm. the 80s, but I do remember that, but that's all I remember. And
yeah.
I've never been there. I don't even think I've been in the neighborhood. I don't.
No, and
I'm not a St. Paul girl. I don't go over there.
And,
so.
And they have like a mobland or gangsterland tour, and that's mm-hmm. going to take you to more than just the Wabasha Caves. But there's a lot of cool stuff here. So appreciate. There's also their website doesn't have as much on the history and the hauntings that are there, but you can find a lot of really cool if you want to look for. If you want to find their tours and anything, you can just go to, let's see, I think it's just wabashacaves.com.
Okay.
And there was, nice. When the new owner took over right after COVID, there's a Kara Levin story. There's a whole bunch of local stories.
Faith Pawn.
Yep. Yep. Faith Pon. Pawn.
Okay. That is so. The best name.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah,
AP.
Thanks, Amy. That was awesome. Really good.
Yeah.
I lived by them for a long time and didn't know that. So
cool.
I think you should have your birthday party there.
You should.
I might look into it that. And see what that would be. Should.
Yeah. What it would cost and entail mm-hmm. and fun stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's my turn.
It's Megan's turn.
Well, I researched First Avenue today. I mean, not today. I mean, well before we recorded, because I do not say
weeks ahead of time.
Years, honestly. I was like, you know, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I probably will use it one time.
Yeah.
So
good that you planned ahead. I love it.
Oh, I'm so good at planning ahead.
I know you are. You're the plan ahead queen. We call you.
Yeah. I exactly. Okay, so First Avenue, no notes. She ate and left no crumbs, as the kids say. I think the kids say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for
sure.
Real. They do. That's what the TikTok says.
That's how we know.
So First Avenue, it is in Minneapolis. You might have heard of it. It's pretty famous throughout the United States as it's kind of known as a place where a lot of people get their start. I know Macklemore did that. He played here. He talks about it in one of his songs. We'll get to the artists that have performed there later. Most of my research didn't find a ton on the spirits. There aren't that many mm-hmm. ghosts that inhabit it, alleged ghosts. Most mm-hmm. of it was just about the history. So it actually opened on a Friday in February in 1937.
Wow.
It opened as a Northland Greyhound bus depot. And when it opened, it was known for its luxuries like public phones,
running water,
shower rooms, and
hold
air
the phone.
Conditioner.
Air conditioner. Mm.
Wow. For 1937, that's
pretty
good.
That is pretty crazy. Yeah.
It's pretty good. Yeah. So it was there for...
We just call that winter.
Yeah, I know, right?
They just opened a window.
Yeah. It's like the smoked cheese. They were like, yeah. Or the aged cheese. They're like, oh, we got to open a window.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In 1968, it relocated. So it was there for 31 years in this building, and then it relocated. In 1969, Alan Fingerhut, heir to the Fingerhut catalog fortune.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of that before.
You have
really?
Oh, no. I have. Yeah, it was
I was
going
to say we. When I worked at the staffing company, we used to staff for one of the warehouses in St. Cloud. Wasn't labeled as Fingerhut, but it was a group that was associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, it's a huge,
very huge, because he had a vision, you guys. He was just like, this
was it of sugar plum fairies?
It was of dancing sugar plum fairies. He was like, this is not a bus depot. He's like, it has been misused. Mm-hmm. This is a rock club.
Mm-hmm.
Despite its meager interior of only a cafe, cigar store, and a barber shop.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
He's like, we're going to take this and we're going to revamp it because this is a rock club. Mm-hmm. What he did in 1969 is he invested $150,000, which in today's money, $1.3
million. Wow.
And he opened, he found somebody with a liquor license to be partners with, and he opened the only venue in downtown Minneapolis with both rock music and alcohol.
Mm.
Holy shit.
I thought you were going to say rock music and roll music.
No, just alcohol.
Like, we have both kinds of music, country and Western.
You keep sipping that Paloma over there.
Yeah.
You'll get funnier as we go on.
Just sip your old Paloma.
My old Paloma. Thank you for listening. The Activity Continues. We'll be back after this short break. Hi, all. I'm sure you have heard our ads for Wantable in the past few months. Both Amy P. and Megan have told you what they like about it, but now it's my turn. A friend and I were talking about Wantable the other day, and she said, it sounds interesting, but I'm so picky about clothes because I hate the styles I'm seeing lately. I told her that I felt that Wantable was made specifically for those who feel like this. First of all, you tell them exactly what you like. You can look at all these pictures on their website and go, I like this, I don't like that, never send me animal prints. And they actually have a real person picking out the clothes based on your preferences. They send all the items to you, and if you don't like any of it, you just put it back in the bag and send it back. I do suggest trying everything on, even if you don't think you'll like it, because I have found many items where I was like, ew, when I pulled it out of the bag, but once I tried it on, I loved it. So I don't recommend rejecting things right away. I also recommend taking some photos or videos of yourself, trying them on, and then a day later go back, rewatch, and then try things on again. You may change your mind. I have. But if you do send it all back, they'll just send you another bag of items to try. When you send something back, they give you an opportunity to say why you didn't like it, and I highly recommend you take the time to tell them. So, like my first bag, they sent me stuff that made me look like I'm going on a cruise ship for senior citizens, and I told them that. So I also recommend being really specific in your comments. Don't be afraid to say, I don't like the cut of this. This one made my boobs look too big, etc. My last reason for loving this way of shopping is that I don't like going to the store and trying on things. Almost nothing looks good on me that way. But I like to do it at home, and then I can mix and match with things that I already own. I can say, oh, I love this scarf, and it matches that dress I have, so I'm going to keep that. Now, Wantable isn't cheap, so think of it as a special treat for yourself. My co-host, AP, does this. Every once in a while, she'll get a box just to celebrate a win or something. So I wouldn't do it every month, but it's fun to get a giant bag of clothes and pull them all out and be like, that's ugly, that's cute. And if you use our promo code, The Activity Continues, you get $25 off whatever items you keep. So jump on this if you're ready to buy your new favorite clothing. Happy shopping. And don't forget, use the promo code The Activity Continues for $25 off your first order.
So it officially opened as First Avenue on April 3rd, 1970. Some of the 70s performers who were there, Frank Zappa, Ike and Tina Turner. Mm-hmm. Ever heard of them?
No.
Chubby Checker.
Wow.
B.B. King, Rod Stewart, U2, which, unpopular opinion, highly overrated band, U2. Unpopular opinion. I know that Bono.
You have three variations there of four letters.
And none of them are right. I know he's like a really good humanitarian and does a lot of, but like, I just don't like his music. Sorry, you guys.
That's fine. That's okay. You don't have to like his music.
I don't.
It's out there for somebody to like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's good. And a lot of people like them.
It's the same thing I tell people who are like, ew, Taylor Swift. I'm like, just because you don't like her music doesn't mean she's not a great artist.
Exactly.
You can't. We could have a whole Taylor Swift podcast. But anyways, back to First Avenue.
People would probably listen.
They would.
Are you going to say Pat Benatar? I mean, girl.
Yes. I was Pat Benatar. She was there. Hit me with your best shot, Amy. Mm-hmm. Come on. See what I did there?
Yeah.
So we ran, we're doing great for about 10 years. And then in 1980, Steve McClellan and Jack Myers took over Uncle Sam's, as it had been renamed. Yes.
I know Steve McClellan.
Is he nice?
He is nice.
Okay. I have a little bit on him. Not much, but I'm glad he's very nice.
Are you going to want to admit that you know him after Mega gets done with her
stuff? I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, I don't know Matt well. I mean.
Just kidding.
No, I've never. I think I met him once many, many years ago, but I had a friend that worked at First Avenue. And so my friend went on vacation and needed someone to. He did the website stuff. And so when he went on vacation, he put me in as their website person in case anything happened to their website while he was on vacation.
Coach.
And so I got to, nothing happened, so I didn't have to do anything, but I got on the guest list pass free to any show I wanted to go to for like 4 years or something.
That's awesome.
Did you ever go?
It was great. Yeah. Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's how I met Steve. And we're friends on Facebook.
Back to me.
That's awesome.
Back to you. sorry.
I'm teasing you guys. I'm sassy pants. Sassy.
Sassy.
So they took over and New Year's Eve 1981, First Avenue as we know it was born. Mm-hmm. Who, you might be thinking, Megan, who regularly went to First Avenue in the 80s?
Me.
And I will tell you, Prince.
No, well, not me. I was going to say Prince.
I didn't
Prince
perform. Was there. I went there, but I didn't perform.
It was also
was
in the
five.
Movie Purple Rain.
Yep.
He also used it as kind of a testing ground for new music mm-hmm. that came. That he
Why
was
is it
working
called
on.
First Ave?
I don't know. They didn't say that.
That's where it's located.
Yeah. And the other part of the bar is 7th Street.
Yeah, it's on First Avenue and 7th Street.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it is 701 North 1st Avenue.
Yep.
Okay. So some of the 80s performers that came were New Order. Never heard of them. Culture Club.
They're a new band. Ever. Megan, you wouldn't know.
There are new. I don't know.
The kids
know.
Like them.
The kids. They say they ate mm-hmm. and left no crumbs. Run DMC.
Woo.
David Byrne, who mm-hmm. I have seen in concert.
You have. You sent me pictures.
I know. I
don't know who that is.
I didn't either.
Talking Heads. Do you know who the Talking Heads are?
I couldn't name a song.
Burning
I'm not
down
great
the
at...
house.
Okay.
Oh, that's them? Oh. He was super good in concert.
When we get to that part of trivia...
That's me. You need me on your team for that part. I know all the 80s.
Thursday part. Night, I'm playing. Oh. Come join me.
The Replacements.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And Husker. Who's Husker Du?
Husker Du.
Husker Du.
Husker Du.
Oh, Amy said she's seen them there.
I've seen them there. And I've seen, well, no, actually, did I see Husker Du or did I just? Yes, I did because they reunited. But the lead singer of Husker Du's name is Bob Mould. And he had a band called Sugar. And mm-hmm. I saw Sugar there. And they were so loud. We were in the upstairs part, and there's plexiglass that mm-hmm. where it used to be just open and you could like fall off the balcony. They put plexiglass up, and it was so loud the plexiglass was shaking.
Mm-hmm.
That's too loud.
It was so fucking loud.
The reverberations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not a fan. Well, in the 2000s, ooh, not great for First Ave. June of 2004, Alan fired Steve Jack. And Jack as the club's management team. Remember Alan Fingerhut, the mm-hmm. Fingerhut heir.
Mm-hmm. And Steve mm-hmm. McClellan, my best friend.
Steve yep. McClellan, Amy's best friend.
And just Jack.
And I don't know Jack. He's nobody.
Jack Myers.
Will and Grace?
He didn't accept your friendship yeah. request.
Right.
Which
I didn't know who he was. Steve didn't tell me.
Steve. Okay, Steve dropped the ball on that one. So Alan fired him. He was like, fuck you guys, I can do this better. And he took the helm of club management himself, swearing, quote, I'd have to drop dead before I would ever allow this club to close. Well, that last, he must have died soon because November 2nd, 2004, Alan
I remember
closed
when that
the club
happened.
And filed bankruptcy.
I vaguely remember this, but I wasn't paying any attention to. I was 18. I wasn't paying yeah. any attention to this at that point in time.
I remember it.
So I'm sure you guys are sitting there going, Megan, how is it still in business?
What
20
next?
Years later?
Tell me, Megan.
Sit down, everybody. The mayor of Minneapolis, R.T. Ryback, believed mm-hmm. in First Avenue so much that he helped Steve, Jack, and Byron buy First Avenue's assets from bankruptcy court and reopened it less than 2 weeks after Alan died and it closed. Alan didn't die, you guys. I'm just
saying. I was going to say, I didn't think like, he really did die.
I'm making yeah, fun of him.
He might be dead
because
by now.
He's like,
but...
he's like, I will yeah. never let it close. And then seven
if
months
that's
later,
that's the last
like,
thing I do.
Oops. Just kidding.
Oh, that was harder than I thought.
So you
that
mean was... somebody who inherits daddy's money and then tries to run his own business is not always good at running a
oh,
business
God,
and might
that
go
sounds
bankrupt.
Familiar.
God. Where have I heard this story before?
If only, I bet you he has 34 several times too. Mm-hmm. Just yeah. So they reopened it 2 weeks after Alan closed it, and then both Steve and Jack have since retired. Okay. But Nathan Krantz, the club's longtime talent buyer, took over as their general manager in 2009.
I know who he is, too. I don't know him. I've never met him, but I know who he is.
Okay, can you maybe stop dropping left, right, and center over
here? My back is starting to hurt from having to pick up all these names you're dropping.
I know, like...
Like I said, I don't know. I just know who he is. I recognize him if I saw him, but I don't. I used to live there in college. I basically lived there. I was there every weekend.
I don't have a chiropractic appointment for like two more weeks. I can't afford this. So in 2010, April 3rd, 2010 was the 40th anniversary, and it was declared First Ave Day by R.T. Ryback, the Minneapolis mayor. Fall of 2013, First Ave extended its reach across city lines and officially moved into St. Paul with the purchase of the Turf Club. Turf Club, which originally opened in 1945, was known as a constant in the Twin Cities music scene for decades. So we cruise along in the 2010s for a little bit, and then something happens in 2020. The pandemic hit.
You guys, that was 5 years ago.
I know.
It feels like last year still.
I know it does. But also like 300 years at the same time.
Yeah, it's like it feels like it was not that long ago, but so long ago at the same point. Mm-hmm. Maybe because we're back in what we're in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine. We're fine. So in March of 2020, the pandemic hit. Obviously, being a live entertainment venue, that didn't really work for them. So they had to shift gears. They had to kind of, you know, try to roll with the time. So they shared community organizing and fundraising events for local artists. They hosted vaccine clinics there. Mm-hmm. Like they did some live streams. They were really trying to just like stay relevant, but also, you know, as all the rest of us are or were, try to navigate their way through this. So Dana Frank, who was the owner of First Avenue at that time, actually helped found an organization called the National Independent Venue Association, NIVA, with the goal to secure congressional passage of relief for the independent live entertainment sector. So in 2020, they introduced the Save Our Stages Act, which was then changed to the Shuttered Venue Operations Grant, the SVOG. And it was passed 9 months later in December 2020, resulting in $16.25 billion of relief for independent live entertainment sector, the largest arts investment in U.S. history.
Wow.
So pretty freaking cool that came from First Avenue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it reopened in the summer of 2021. It's been open ever since, and it remains one of the most iconic, independent, and locally owned venues in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's just a couple of ghosts. Honestly, there wasn't much alleged ghosts. So the most famous ghost is a woman who people see. She can be seen in the restroom or dancing in the main room wearing an army jacket. She doesn't have legs, though, so it's a little different.
Green screen.
Well, so her story is that she was allegedly waiting at the bus depot for her husband. Some stories call lover. Mm-hmm. Lover. And while waiting there for him to return from World War II, she learned that he died. And distraught, she hung herself in the bathroom. Now, this is a legend. It has never been confirmed.
So she's a lady in white. Because every single lady in white was distraught waiting for a husband to come back from something or a lover or whatever to come back from something. So they all die by suicide. That's just not saying that it's not true. Mm-hmm. Just feels like a
it's a very tropey.
It's a trope for sure.
You're either a woman in white, a red, gray.
Yep. I mean, black dress. Yeah. Any
black,
of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyways.
Okay. So. She is the most famous ghost. There is a YouTube video, and I will send it to Amy to link in the show notes, where a woman goes in with a psychic, and the psychic said she saw the spirit of a girl pulling the hair of an employee. When the employee was asked about it, she said that, you know, she does often feel her hair being pulled, but she thought it was just a figment of her imagination. And I'm like, I would not think that. But that's
not
just
if it
me.
Happens over and over again.
Yeah. Amy, you looked for her. Did you ever find her?
I knew the story about the woman that was waiting for her boyfriend or whatever. And
her lover.
And I know I was told that when you go into the bathrooms, it was the one on the far left.
Okay.
And so you go in and there's just a whole long row of bathrooms and or as stalls, I should say.
One is in a west restroom. That's usually
yeah. But
the
I mean, like, they
just being a bitch.
There's like 15
it is
of
very
them.
Long.
It's yeah, very big.
It's very long.
There should be.
And I know. And I think they even added, like, they knocked down something else and added more on the other side because they're always full. But I went in there once. I was at a show there and I was a little drunk and I said, I'm going to go. But I know that never happened. Just that one time ever. I went and I said, I'm going to go find that ghost. And I went in, I went to that stall and I closed the door and I said, come on out. I'm here if you wanted me to see you.
And I can just picture you doing this too.
I
was there.
And nothing. She didn't want to deal with me.
She was like that. She's fucking
she was
drunk.
Like, I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
She's like, I want people to hear me, but I'm not drunk girl in the stall.
Yeah. Moaning Myrtle. She's not.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Even I know what that is.
Yeah.
The last time I went there, it was more recently. It was probably just like a year ago. Mm-hmm. And I did go back in the bathroom, but I didn't go over to that area. Mm-hmm. But the times that I went before, like all through the 80s and 90s, I was not like, I was into ghost stuff, but I never didn't know like how to look for it or I didn't know what to feel for. Like, so I didn't ever have any experience except the time I tried to get her to come on out wherever you are. And she did not oblige.
She was like, I am not a trained monkey.
That's right.
I am.
She was probably like, do you know a guy named Zach? Just kidding. I wasn't mean to her. I told her I wanted to see her. I told her I wanted her story. She wasn't interested.
She was like, I'm not. I'm busy. Yeah. She's like, I need my
Maybe she was on the dance floor.
Without her legs dancing. She was really feeling the move.
Legless
the
dancing.
If I don't have a nickel for every time I said that, I'd have a nickel. So also the building, the site itself was rumored to have been a slaughterhouse before the bus depot. So people have reported hearing screams of the spirits of animals, but that has never been like confirmed or corroborated. Most of this stuff, honestly, is like just like hearsay.
That doesn't seem like the right place to have. Like when you think about building a town and that sort of stuff, it's not that close to a river where a slaughterhouse you'd want to have it somewhere nearby that you could get shipping, you know, or you're getting animals off a ship or any of that sort of stuff and cleaning because they really didn't care about the cleanliness of things at that point in time.
Yeah. So that's just a rumor. There's also a rumor of a spirit named Flippy who likes to make the sound of bar stools being put onto tables.
Oh.
In my research for my other website, which this might be a good segue into what we're going to talk about next, there is a character named Flippy.
Hmm. Nice.
Does
he make the sound of bar stools being put onto tables?
Not that
does
I know
he
about,
flip
but...
people off a lot?
I don't know.
Maybe
I don't remember knowing why his name was Flippy. It was just one of those things where we were learning about all the different people and their goofy names. And I remember Flippy and I thinking that was so funny. And I think it was even on his gravestone. It said Flippy in quotes on his gravestone. Mm-hmm. I'll have to look into that. I'll do a socials post or something or a Patreon post if I find any more of that connection.
And then the last thing that I saved it for last because it's kind of the creepiest is so there's a record room. Obviously. And DJs playing records in the record room will say that the record arm would start bouncing on the album for no reason. Like it would just start beep, 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 beep. And even today in the digital electronic, you know, world of not needing records, a lot of DJs and music makers will say that they have heard moans, groans, and even growls in their headphones that are not part of the music.
Yikes.
Interesting.
So... That is The Haunting of First Avenue.
I love it. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I didn't know great. All of that Thank backstory you. On that.
I didn't either. I was when I was doing my research weeks ago, I was like, this is really.
Do you want to cite your sources quick?
Yes. So a lot of the history I got from their page, firstavenue.com, about our history. And then a lot of the ghost stuff I got from AmericanGhostWalks.com.
Okay. They have a few different things throughout the Twin Cities area. So I've looked at them before. I just always run out of time in October.
Yeah.
And I believe that they are on a couple of ghost tours. First mm-hmm. Avenue is on some ghost mm-hmm. tours in cool. Minneapolis. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Hey,
it's a really cool area.
There's a lot of cool things to entice building. People to come really and is. Check out Minnesota, because we are more than snow.
We yes. are.
We are.
We are also mosquitoes.
Yeah.
yes.
Snow but, and mosquitoes.
But that's not the only reason to come here, mosquitoes.
I mean, if you need more yeah. than mosquitoes. Than
there's like any. Billions of them. So there's that many reasons.
Yeah, that's a lot of reasons.
That's a lot of
mosquito
reasons.
Mosquito one, mosquito two,
three, red, blue. I did see Blue October at First Ave, which I hadn't known about them. But my friend Amanda was like, I have tickets and she loves them. And I was like, cool. Oh, my God. The lead singer is so hot, first of all. Second of all, they are super, like, I really like their music. It helped me get through my breakup with Dick Liquor.
Oh.
But they're really great. So cool. That's First Ave.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
It's really cool building.
Yeah, it is. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Amy.
Yeah.
You had a segue.
Well, I just wanted to tell you guys about the live show, which I don't want to spend a ton of time doing that here. We can do that more in the sideshow. But I wanted to connect a couple of things with Amy's story in particular. Mm-hmm. As she was talking about Dillinger, there's a guy that wrote a book called Dillinger Slept Here. His name is Paul McAbee, and it's Ooh. All about how John Dillinger was arrested here. And he was here a lot, you know, mm-hmm. hanging out with his buddies in St. Paul. And that guy, the author, was on my show. He was one of our ghosts.
That is so cool.
He was one of your ghosts?
Yes.
Whoa.
One of our guests. Wow. He is still living.
Did you just admit to a crime? No. Well, he was alive when he started the interview, but we really wanted to spookify it, so...
No, he's great. He was so much... All of our guests were great, and we'll get more in that in the sideshow. Yeah. But one of the questions that we asked him was, what was the difference in the way that these gangsters behaved between the St. Paul guys and the Minneapolis guys?
That's a really good question.
Yeah. I didn't come up with it. And the St. Paul guys were kind of a murdery bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And the Minneapolis guys, they just wanted to make money. The St. Paul guys
were on the river is earlier stop and easy access to get back on riverboats and get out of town
mm-hmm.
or get out of Dodge.
Yeah. Well, and the I don't know how much difference this makes, because back in those days, they were sort of seen as equally not white, mm-hmm. quote unquote, right? But the St. Paul guys were the Irish mm-hmm. gang.
Yep.
And the Minneapolis were the Jewish gang.
Yep. But,
and back then, neither of those were considered white. If you were an immigrant, you were not
Irish.
White.
Irish were treated
that's stupid
and Italians too, and that's why they ended up being
stupid, because I think a lot of, like, even the railroads were built by Chinese and that's Irish.
So,
immigrants, and so dumb. they were all treated as less than.
I hate it here. Fucking hate it.
And that's why, at least the guys that I researched, which is the Jewish mob, they when they came here from wherever they came, my guy, the one that my story focuses on, Kid Can, Isidore Blumenfeld, he came from Romania.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense that side was more on the Jewish side, because Northeast, which is often called mm-hmm. Nordeast, was mm-hmm. a very Polish community. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the Poles and the Jewish and mm-hmm. Romanian, all those that came from those Eastern European countries came more to the Minneapolis sector.
Yeah. Yep.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm.
Yep. That makes sense.
And a lot of the booze that was made during Prohibition was made up in Duluth. And that was...
Wow.
Supposedly my grandma made... My great-grandma. Because she was from Poland. That she ran, so I've talked about it before, but she's the one I learned how, well, I never met her, but her pierogi recipe is mm-hmm. the one that's passed down in our family. Mm-hmm. But when they came over, my grandpa was born here, but a couple of his siblings were born in Poland. And so she ran a boarding house and mm-hmm. they never knew who was staying mm-hmm. in their room that night. Mm-hmm. Like 100 years ago, this was 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he would not know who was going to be staying in his room because it was just by night that they charged. And supposedly my dad said after she passed away when he was like 10 or 11, they were cleaning out her house and she wasn't far from Nicollet Island, which also has a bunch of caves mm-hmm. that was used to run booze.
That place is haunted faux show.
Oh, God, it has to
Nicollet
be.
Inn.
And she wasn't far from there, but they found she had a still in her basement.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
We didn't get that recipe. It's probably potato vodka.
You probably wouldn't like it.
It was probably a version of potato vodka.
Probably. Yeah. Back then, most people were making their own at home. Mm-hmm. Whether they were selling it and calling themselves a bootlegger is a different story. But a lot of people were making their own because you couldn't buy it.
It's how NASCAR became what it is. Stock car
people
racing?
Making their own cars in the basement?
No. Stock car racing is all because of Prohibition.
Oh.
So because they would have to race to get the moonshine out. Mm-hmm. So American car racing is all started, the stock car racing and everything all started because of that. It was there was a front to it as well, but it was kind of like, this is how we get everything out of here.
Huh. I did not mm-hmm. know that.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Random all uses right. facts.
Do we have more on this or...
No, I think I'll save the Palmer House for another day tales.
We were, before you jumped on, Megan, Amy and I were chatting about how it might be fun to just throw one of these in.
Yeah.
A short one every episode just to like,
that's
so
cool.
that we can sort of share the haunted places in where we live. Mm-hmm. And then maybe someday go to one. I do want to add one other thing. There's another author that was on our live show, yeah. and her name is Ron DeBellew, mm-hmm. Bellew, and she wrote a book about Kid Can, which is why she was on my show. Mm-hmm. But her next venture is a book about haunted Minneapolis. And so Ooh. She would like anybody, and this is for anybody listening, and you guys too, anybody with a story about a haunted place. It does mm-hmm. have to be in Minneapolis. Can't be St. Paul. Can't be somewhere else. Has to be Minneapolis. I will put her address in the show notes, her email address, or I'll do a voiceover right here and pop it in. Ron's email is hauntedinminneapolis@gmail.com. But she's looking for stories to interview people for her book. So that I want to put that out there.
You should tell her all about your house.
I already connected her with Melissa. She's already talked to her.
Good.
And the three of us are going to go have lunch probably next week sometime.
Cool.
Oh my God, how fun. Yeah. New friends.
Yeah. So just wanted to throw that out there for her.
Cool. Yes.
If anybody has any really haunted stories in Minneapolis or knows anybody that does, that's who to contact.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, thanks everyone. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks everybody. Hope you enjoyed our haunted places in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And St. Paul.
And St. Paul. Twin Cities.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Activity Continues podcast. We really appreciate you giving us your ears for a bit. Please feel free to drop us a note and say hi. And join us next time when the activity continues.
Nailed it.
The Activity Continues is produced by me, Amy, at Collected Sounds Media, and is part of the independent Collected Sounds Podcast Network.